WBAI.org on the web. The time now is 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind.
This is The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I'm your host, Julian Gioiello, and of course, as usual, hosting with me is Ben Starr here in the studio.
Hey, Julian, great to be back. And today we have a very special guest. Those of you longtime listeners will remember Lisa Arnone, an associate therapist here at the DeMel Center. She's been in practice for 30 years and was a five-year associate of Armand's. Welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you on here again. So yesterday we were talking about smartphones and their effect on social interaction. Smartphones meaning phones that are connected to the internet. You can do anything, order movie tickets, order food, text a friend, call your family, send an email all at once on the go. That's a smartphone, right? And cell phones are just, you know, phones that you have. They're mobile devices that can text and call anytime. And we got several callers yesterday, very gung-ho, and on the idea of they felt that texting and cell phones and smartphones were ruining social interaction in the modern times. And we want to talk more about that and not talk just about how it ruins social interaction, but how it affects it in both positive and negative ways and the different ways that people communicate now with technology in the modern times.
Right. So I was listening to the show and I was mildly disagreeing. So after they finished, I came into the studio to talk to them and we had a nice discussion about the ways in which technology has enhanced our ability to be connected to each other.
Right. So there's a way that we are all sort of interconnected now that you weren't 30, 40 years ago, before the internet, before everybody had a consistent connection to the internet and to a phone line.
Even 20 years ago, I mean, getting on the internet was an ordeal.
You actually had to turn your phone off
to use the internet.
Yeah,
you had to plug the phone into the computer, dial up, and it went on your phone bill. It was really slow.
Not everybody had an email address. Not everybody had a cell phone. I mean, now we have over 90% of people have some mobile phone. 67 or 70% have smartphones, and this is in America. And so right now we have this consistent connection to the people that have our cell phone number, the people that have our emails, and there's an expectation on our end to be able to be contacted at all times. And if it's not instant, it's quick. It's expected. Most people expect to hear back from their friend or family member or significant other within a couple of hours, and if not, they're ignoring them or something's going on.
Yeah, I was really worried, Julian, when I texted you yesterday and you didn't write me back for 6 hours. What happened?
I was dead. So I was dead. Yeah. But I mean, it feels like that sometimes. And I know we've all been in that place. If you have a cell phone and your significant other has a cell phone, you call them, they don't pick up. You text them a couple times, say, hey, where are you? What's going on? Within a couple hours, if you don't hear back, I mean, they're cheating on you. They're dead. They're gone, their phone's gone, and they fell in the river. You know, it's like, what happened? And that wasn't something that happened before. If you couldn't contact somebody, they just weren't at home. So we want to talk more about how this has affected us. And obviously, we want to hear from our listeners, who we love hearing from, on their opinions about this subject. But
yeah, we got such a great response yesterday that we decided to continue this topic and expand it, not just from how smartphones have affected communication, but how technology in general has affected a lot of aspects of life.
I mean,
from dating to our purchasing habits?
Well, I always think about when I was a child, we had encyclopedias. And every year you would get another volume that would fill in what was missing, the new stuff that happened in that year. And whenever I want to know anything, all I have to do is type it into Google.
Right.
And I can find out anything. Right. At any time.
And what's amazing is when you're sitting around a table with a couple of friends and there's an argument that comes about something involving a fact or knowledge.
Wikipedia.
It is not like the person who went to Thailand at your group is the only person who knows anything about Thailand and he is the go-to person and that's it. You know, it's you look up Wikipedia Thailand, boom, you've got all the facts, all the history, everything you need to know within 10 seconds.
Which I would say for someone of my generation or older, I can't believe that people just don't think that's miraculous.
Right.
Because you had to go to the library, you had to go through the card file, you had to look up articles or books, and at home I had to go to the encyclopedia.
Right.
You're poring over things mm-hmm. just to get an answer that now we can get in 15 seconds.
It is miraculous, Lisa. And when I, you know, the thing that comes to my mind is I look at my father's record collection. My mm-hmm. dad is an avid music listener, record collector, has been for many years. And his record collection takes up shelves and shelves of space. I mean, almost an entire wall of a room filled with records. Mm-hmm. And now we live in an age where that entire record collection can be consolidated into a phone that also makes phone calls and takes videos and takes pictures that are better than the top-of-the-line cameras from 10, 15
right.
years
and
ago.
You can imagine someone who's living on the go can basically bring most of what they care about with them in a phone or tablet. So you upload all your photos that matter, you scan them, you have all the documents that you need scanned in, you have all your favorite music and
books,
all your books that you want. It's all on one thing, and it becomes so much easier to move around. It becomes so much easier to get up and go somewhere else.
Right, so the question is, does it help us be more connected to each other? Because that's
right.
what was
because,
not
I mean,
happening yesterday, or not
right.
being said yesterday.
Yeah, so today we're talking about, you know, do you feel that you're more connected to people now than ever, or less? Or is it just different? And I think it's, I was reading an article, and they have a strong opinion. It's a tech blog, so you can imagine they very much like technology. And they had two pictures next to each other, one from 1900 and one from 2015, and it's people waiting at a train station. And they say, do you notice the similarity between these two photos? Both photos have all of the people waiting on the train station looking down. One side, it's the people from the 1900s reading a newspaper. And the other side is people staring at their smartphones. And so has it changed? Have we gotten more distracted and lost in our smartphones, walking around, staring at our phones? Or has it just become a different kind of distraction that we will always find in one way or another?
Right. And I was saying that especially in settings like a train station or elevator, places where you're up against people, a lot of people, I think that there's a way that we need to protect a sense of space around
right.
us. So the newspaper provided that, and I mm-hmm. think now the smartphone provides it.
Yeah, especially in a city like New York or any other city that's crowded and dense and full of people. I think it's a good point. And, you know, as always on The Positive Mind, we like to present all sides and consider all notions of a topic. And that's why when Lisa came in yesterday after the show, it was really interesting to hear your ideas and perspectives on the pluses of smartphone and its effect on communication. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we want to sort of hash this out. And we'll still be taking your calls today a little bit later. But, you know, we want to hear again your perspective on the impact of technology on communications. I mean, for me, a big one is dating.
Right.
Nowadays, a lot of people, especially people under 40, have been using smartphones and the internet to find dates and to find potential mates, if you will, for relationships. And there's been much ado about that, whether that's changed relationships for better or for worse.
Right. Well, an interesting thing that came about yesterday that we were talking about was this idea of the shield, of the internet, of text chatting. You know, 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't just texting, but it was chat rooms. People used chat rooms or AOL Instant Messenger or MSN Messenger, and there were, it was text communication. And there was something that I found out, and I saw you guys also mentioning this, that there was a kind of courage that you get from having this shield up. I mean, we were talking about how it's a shield, and it really represents that in some ways. There were things that I couldn't ever say to someone, or things that I never felt comfortable saying to a girl I liked, or saying sorry to somebody that I felt really bad about, and I wouldn't say it unless I was behind this shield. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting thinking of this as an almost benefit to some people. There are people who say, you know, socially I get very nervous and I can't talk to a girl, or I get afraid talking to new people. But when I'm online, I can just kind of hide behind that. And,
or be yourself.
Or be myself, right. It's like I can be natural, and I don't freak out anymore. I don't get any anxiety from it. It's just, it feels good to me. And I have a lot of friends who have been addicted to video games, for example, or just they play a lot of video games, and they have a lot of friends online, and they consider these real friendships.
One of the things I realized most is that I've been given all of these different forms of communication, and now I get to choose. First, when it was just email, I used to feel like, oh, this is like letter writing again, and I did that for a little while, and then there's the smartphone, and now there's texting, which is my personal favorite. Like, I tell everybody, if you want a fast answer from me, text me. And so I'm able to kind of tailor how people get in touch with me in a way that I know is going to be the most effective. Like, I'm definitely going to respond to
right.
that.
And it's interesting talking about tailoring your experience, because technology gives you a lot of room to tailor how you're perceived, whether it be the best of you that you're showing them, or what side of you that you want them to see. And Skype comes to mind with this too, with video chatting, because we all know if you video chatted, I know I watched the people I'm talking to staring mostly at themselves during the video chat.
Right, the little box,
which
on
is
the
strange.
Corner.
There's a little part in the corner that shows you as a preview of you, and the big box is the video of the other person. And a lot of the time I see their eyes kind of looking at the top corner. I'm like, what are they looking at? And I'm like, they're looking at themselves. And it's like having a mirror in front of you at all times. And the Skype chat, this video chat, whether it be FaceTime, Skype, or any other video chat, Google video, it plays this kind of weird role where it's like, oh, it's like I'm talking to them, but it's this weird thing where they're very self-aware, and they know exactly what they look like, they know what their surroundings look like, and they can actually tailor them to look the best and feel the best, and they know what they look like the whole time they're talking.
I feel like you have a bias. I keep hearing your bias, which
no,
is
sure.
which is that it's a kind of ability to manipulate.
Right.
Which I think that I don't think we do anything on technology. I mean, not anything. We don't do most things on technology that we wouldn't do in our regular lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're looking at ourselves in a window of a store as we walk by when we're talking to somebody. You know, we're trying to say things in the most clear possible way. We're editing ourselves. We're doing all that when we're not connected to
technology. Right, people have been doing this for hundreds of years.
Right, well, that's the other thing I was thinking about. This is not connected to your bias, but
right.
In Victorian times, people were not meeting up with each other the way they were writing letters. They were communicating their most inner thoughts and desires to other people via letter. And then, so that's texting and email. And then there were sitting rooms. People came over and they sat after dinner together and they talked. So that's the rest of it.
Well, I understand the point you're making, although I would disagree that when you say that people don't do things through technology that they wouldn't do in real life. I mean, all you have to do to see that is go on the comment section of any news article online, mm-hmm. and people post the most inflammatory,
you
know, racist, crazy things that I don't think they would ever have the courage to say in real life.
But do you consider that communication? Because I don't.
I do.
It is a form of communication, or a form of sort of, a lot of people use social media to garner attention, I think, for themselves too, in a way. Like they say, they'll say something very inflammatory or very racist to push themselves out there and say, look at me, I'm this, you know, crazy person. I want some attention from the rest of the community here at this website that I'm commenting on.
But maybe we should just talk about us.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're just people
sure.
who aren't trying to garner attention, except right now, and who really just use it to communicate as best we can with people that we care about.
No, absolutely.
So those are the people that I feel like I want to talk to. Because there are always those fanatics. They're always going to be there.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to Julian, the notion of being having the courage to say certain things online to, you know, whether it's a girl that you don't know how to talk to,
right,
or someone you wanted to apologize to. Was that a stepping stone, if you will? Was that a stepladder to being able to have that courage, or was it a crutch? And what I mean by that is, did that help you or people you know have more courage in real life to approach people they were interested in or to make themselves vulnerable? Or was it a crutch that they used to not be vulnerable?
Well, you know, we did a program called the Hikikomori, which is this phenomenon mostly in Japan, but all over the world on the internet, of people who spend six months to a year primarily in their own home on the computer. And these are the people that you consider like the modern hermit. You know, these mostly young teenagers who have not developed the interpersonal, physical, social skills that most people, you would say, most healthy people would have. And they get lost in it and really don't ever go outside for anything other than some water or some food and then to come back and go on the computer and play a video game or talk on a chat room. And I think it leaves room for possibilities of getting lost in only internet and only this text interaction rather than physical social interaction. I don't know if messaging by text really benefited me as a social human being. I think it eventually developed through my interaction with people, but it allowed me to talk to people that I would never normally speak to because I was too afraid, you know, the hot girl in middle school.
Right. That was exactly the first thing that came to my mind,
right.
Was that cute girl in seventh grade that you really wanted to get to know. But
yeah, for those people who grew up with this very popular, you know, AOL Instant Messenger or MSN, it was this kind of way you would give your screen name to somebody and it was like giving someone your phone number. But these are all ways to communicate, just like if you were giving someone your phone number. I'm sure it's still easier to speak to someone over the phone than it is to speak to them in person sometimes if you have any kind of anxiety. So these are all just sort of ways to communicate. It's interesting looking at the differences, though.
Sure. I definitely think so. And I wonder, Lisa, you see a lot of people and you help people work through a lot of different issues. How do you see this issue of technology and communication when it comes to people that you're helping as far as their relationships or their own personal problems?
In some ways, I think it gives people immediate access. Even if I can't answer right away, if someone's in a moment of crisis, they can communicate that crisis. They can put it down, and they're compelled to in a way that they might not be otherwise. So they put words to what they're feeling, and they send it to me. I get it whenever. Sometimes I talk about it. I get it. And I talk about it sometimes when we're in session, or I'll text them back.
So has this technology, in a way, made therapists sort of on call, if you will, like 24/7?
You know, I know that some people have that problem. I don't feel that my patients ever take advantage of that. And I only answer if I feel like it's an emergency. Otherwise, I'll wait until we meet again. But I feel like it definitely augments our communication and enhances something.
Yeah, I mean, we can dub this era the era of convenience. It sort of gives us a more convenient way to communicate with people, and that can be taken advantage of, but again, this has always been taken advantage of. I think this becomes more and more of an intense thing, much more of the ability to communicate anytime you want. Not only, you know, back when it was just phones, it was, oh, wow, you can communicate with somebody when they're at home and you're at home. I mean, that's crazy. And that was a big deal back then. And now it becomes you can communicate with somebody when they're in China and I'm in America at any moment, and I can text them, I can video chat them, I can see someone's face who is 6,000 miles away, and that's the reality of what it is, of what is happening, and that's amazing too for long distance relationships.
Yeah, it's shrinking the world effectively, and I think that's what globalization is at its core in many ways, is making the world a smaller place. So through the advent of air travel, we can now fly around the world in a day when it used to take weeks or months on a boat. And with this era of communication, we can send a message around the world in a split second.
Talk to anyone we want.
Yeah.
Right, so that's a indication of the fact that it connects us. I think that there's a spectrum, right, that there has to be your intervention of the human person. So here's this thing, it's able to do all this stuff. When telephones first came about, I'm sure some people felt that they were intrusive. And some people thought they were miraculous, right? And so you get to respond to it how you respond to it. Some people turn their ringer off when we had phones. Some people turn their phones off after a certain hour. Like, you have to develop your own relationship to it and not be tyrannized by it, but use it the way you want to use it. I mean,
right.
I think that's the piece that's missing, is like, we get to decide.
We do get to decide, but there is something happening also with the people around us. I mean, we don't have control over what happens around us, and a lot of people can feel offended when people are walking on the street and running into them because they're texting. Or I know we had our guest in here yesterday, and she was videotaping while we were doing kind of personal things, and it was for her blog, and I was like, oh, I didn't know you were going to videotape because it's on her phone, and I didn't even really realize what was happening.
Yeah, I think, you know, Lisa used the word tyrannized, and I think that's an important word, because a lot of people feel tyrannized, especially when it comes to the workplace, right? There's this classic idea of a 9-to-5 job, but now people have email, their work email is tied to their phone,
right.
And they go home at 5, but now it's 7-8 o'clock at night, and the boss is sending them emails, and there is an expectation, right? Not even necessarily implicit. It can be a very explicit expectation that people are always available. So I think it's about striking a balance. I mean, yes, there is tremendous possibilities generated by this sort of communication technology, but at the same time, how available do we want to be? And that's, like you say, some people have opted to turn their phones off.
Yeah. And I have, you know, the friends in my life who are very specific. They're like, I don't have a smartphone. I don't have Facebook. I just want to be contacted. You know, when I get off work, call me then. And you can call my home phone or you can call my cell phone, but I don't text really. I don't message. And so there's the expectations that you get from the people around you. And I know we were hearing from listeners yesterday saying that I don't think they were as afraid of this about themselves losing contact, but in fact, what was expected of them now in this modern age.
Right. It's absolutely transformed the business world, because now deals are happening, right? Deals happen 24/7. And if you're not available, you know, maybe Saturday morning or Sunday afternoon or late Thursday night, you can be passed over. And I think that drives a lot of people to feel like they have to stay connected.
Yeah. But it's definitely an exciting thing. I mean, we all have adopted this technology, and it is now part of humanity. And it grows so quickly. I think a lot of people grow afraid of it. They say, oh my God, what is this thing? I remember 5 years ago we didn't have this thing. But at the same time, there's so many things you can do now that really you couldn't even fathom.
Yeah, I think technology has changed the world more in the last 20 years than it has in the last 100. And, you know, in the 90s, they were calling it the information age with the rise of the internet. And I think now we're somewhat in this communication age, because everything is so predicated on instant contact and connections.
Absolutely.
And social networking and messaging. And, you know, now it's all about communication and quickly.
Yeah.
But it's because it's so new, we have to figure out how we use it. And so in business, I think it is a tyranny. But in social interactions, we were talking about this yesterday, everyone has their own style. They always had their own style of how they responded to phone calls, how long you had to wait to hear back from them, you know, who avoids and who engages. And so you still get to have your own style, and you couldn't be explicit about it, or your friends might just know that, oh, yeah.
Better not call Lisa after 9.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. She's not going to call me back for a couple of days or whatever, it, you know.
Yeah. Well, we actually, we're just getting, we have 5 minutes till our 1:30 break, but we'd love to hear from our listeners, and we're going to get started on taking calls. So please call us at 212-757-5555. That's our call-in number here. We'd love to hear your feelings about social interaction, how it's been affected by technology these days.
How's it affected you personally? How has it affected your relationships?
Yeah, and what sort of expectations do you feel from the people around you, from your family, from your relationships? Do you feel like you don't get any private time anymore? Is that something that an anxiety that you might have now that might have not been around 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah. What do you like and what don't you like?
Yeah, it's everything has changed so quickly. And it's like you said, Lisa, we're all kind of learning how to deal with this. And because it's so new, it's something that we're all learning on the fly. Yeah. And so it's really an experience that we're all living together. And I know, I think everyone in this room right now, the three of us, we all have smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
I think something like 70%, was it, Julian? 70% of Americans have smartphones now.
So we're being bombarded by possibilities.
Yeah, that figure is growing and growing every day. We want to take a call before the break. Melanie, you're on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, it's Marilyn, by the way.
Oh, Marilyn. Hi, Marilyn.
Yes. Hi. Yes, it's great listening to you. And since Armin has passed, has died. And yes, about today's topic. I don't have a smartphone at the moment and haven't had for about 2 months. And I find life much less hectic. It was a bit demanding for and interrupting other activities and having less time to think. And it was like half a very good convenience, but also a real tyranny, you
know. So you had a smartphone until 2 months ago. Is that what you're saying?
Yes,
now you have a phone
got too old, according to them. Now it started giving trouble since it was like 2 years old, and then it was almost 3 years old, so it was freezing all the time or just turning itself off.
So now you're using a standard cell phone? You have a regular phone now?
Yes, you know, one of those Obama phones.
Okay. And you say you've noticed that life is less hectic now.
Oh, much less, yes.
Have you found that your close personal relationships, how have they been affected in the last couple of months?
Well, I just text everyone now, and they don't get back in touch with me until after I've texted them back, and that could be in a few minutes to maybe a day or two if I've missed that text. And that's a comfortable pace to communicate with others, to be in touch with others, you know. I guess I'm kind of the laid-back type of person, you know, beachcomber type of person.
Well, there's all different styles.
So the lack of their smartphone has allowed you to set your own pace.
Yes, and then I can use the computer at my international clubhouse or at the library and go on the internet there, you know?
Yeah.
So
right.
I don't feel any great lack, actually.
Right, so there's actually, you still have access to the internet and this communication stuff, but it's not so readily available, and so instead you choose to sort of make the phone calls that are necessary or the ones that you really want to make the text messages that you really want to make, but in the end, go outside, have these experiences in person, and then when you need the internet, you can go to the library.
Yeah, that's true. And also, I really enjoy writing poetry. And, you know, you need to write stuff down as soon as it comes to you. And then there would be this phone ringing and interrupting my train of thought. It was terrible, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience with the after smartphone experience for you, Marilyn. And thanks for calling in today. We're actually getting to our break right now, so we're gonna have to go. But
thank
you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and make sure to keep calling in 212-757-5555. We're gonna play a little bit of music for you here on WBAI 99.5 FM and The Positive Mind.
That's Kali with Débranché, a classic Positive Mind tune. By the way, Débranché is French for unplugged or disconnected. A little relevant here as we discuss communication, smartphones, and cell phones.
Yeah, really great stuff. I have Ken on the line. Ken, are you there?
Hello, yes, hi.
Hi, Ken. So how have what are your feelings about what we've been talking about the last couple of days?
Well, I've only had a smartphone now for about 2 years.
Okay.
I don't have a computer. This is my computer, my smartphone.
Right. I mean, it's really a mini computer in your hand.
Exactly. And that's where I use it as a tool. I'm not letting it control me. I control the computer.
Right. You have the self-control to not let it affect you too much. Just use it as a means of communication, right?
Exactly. If I want to turn it on, I turn it on. If I want to turn it off, I turn it off.
And so do you ever feel pressure when your phone is off? To that perhaps you're missing out on somebody who's trying to contact you, or people get angry, say, I couldn't call you. I called you. You didn't respond. Do you ever feel that kind of pressure, or is that non-existent?
Well, I'm 58 years old. I didn't grow up with this technology.
Right.
I like my privacy. I don't need people contacting me all the time. If I'm expecting a call, I'll turn it on. I'll even let it sit and ring and see who calls.
Right.
I really don't care, you know? This is my life. It's my movie.
No, I like that.
I don't need other people to dictate my movie.
Right, so you're taking this tool and reaping the benefits of it and then setting the limits that you need to set to feel like it's not impinging on your life.
You know, exactly, believe it or not.
Exactly, and that's what everybody should do. You know, you can't let a piece of technology control you.
Yeah, you say this
you're not the robot. That's the robot.
Absolutely, and I commend your ability to do this because, to be honest, a lot of people cannot do what you're doing right now. A lot of people get lost in it. They say, oh, I want to take these photos of these things, and I want to send it to all my friends, and oh, I need to call this person and text this person, and oh, I want to see a movie right now. And it's kind of like your ability to do that is actually it's not commonplace anymore, which is I commend you for that, Ken.
Well, because I don't know why all these people need all this crap in their lives.
Well, it's like you said, Ken, a lot of people out there are relying on the smartphone as their primary connection to the internet. So that's pretty common right now. And I think a lot of people, like Julian said, have this almost fear of missing out and this compulsion to be constantly checking. It's like this information addiction that has kind of popped up. But I think it's really interesting to hear from someone like you who seems to really have it under control.
You know, if I need information, I'll look it up. But just to get information, you know, it's like I don't watch television.
Right.
Very rarely, unless there's something somebody tells me to check out. I don't like the commercials. I don't need to be sold stuff I don't want.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Ken, because we were discussing before the program how this new communication and technology has even changed purchasing habits, right? So if I saw 1,000 commercials for a certain kind of car, and then Ken, you told me that this other kind of car was better and I trusted you, I'm more likely to buy that. And that's happened a lot now with social media, is this sort of word of mouth marketing is more powerful than any kind of ad campaign on TV or radio.
Right. And there's a lot more respect for letters and for phone calls and for physical contact social interaction, meaning between two people in the same room. And a lot more respect has come out of that because it's so commonplace to sort of get lost in the smartphone. But it sounds like you guys are living in harmony, and I say you guys as in you, Ken, and your smartphone. So I think it sounds like you're on the right track, and I would love to be in that place where you just kind of use it as a tool and don't get too addicted to it and too lost and feel any kind of anxiety. So thank you for sharing with us, Ken.
But see, you grew up with it.
Exactly. It's true.
I didn't.
Yeah, maybe that's the difference.
In a large respect, I blame people's parents.
So you think it's a generational thing?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And then people want to stay young, so they want to do what young people do. And I think they neglect their lives over their stupid phone.
Well, let me ask you a question, Ken.
Like you said, they don't go out and do things.
Ken, what did you grow up with that your parents didn't?
I don't know. I really can't say, because I grew up in the 60s. What did my parents grew up, I guess, without television.
Right, and your relationship with television, you were saying you don't really watch television.
I never watched television. I'd rather go, you know, when I was a kid, I'd rather go out and play ball on the street with my friends.
That's great. I respect that. I think
I'm
you have a great
a
way of looking at things.
I'm more of a social interactor, or go do things, take a hike, go out and take a drive. You know, instead of playing a video game, I'll get in my car and I'll drive around for a couple of hours and see things.
Yeah, always nice to take a cruise. Well, Ken, thanks for the call, and we appreciate you calling in and staying tuned in to the positive.
Thanks for having me on and, you know, listening to my perspective.
Absolutely.
And there's one other point I want to make.
Sure.
That, you know, they fight about having cell phones in schools. All it is a distraction for the students, and I see it as keeping the students distracted to keep them from learning.
Yeah,
they don't want to educate people today because they don't want people to stop and think about what they're doing.
Yeah, I remember being in school and a lot of kids just kind of staring into their desks, and I'm like, what are they doing over there? And it's like, oh, okay, they're texting their friend, they're doing something else, and they're not really focusing on what's happening in the now. And then that's what we're kind of looking for. And I think me and you can respect this idea of just, instead of being lost in a little box of light in front of us, perhaps looking around us and saying, what's going on here? And thank you so much, Ken, for calling in and talking to us about this.
Okay, great show, guys. Keep it up.
Thank you so much, Ken. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 212-757-5555 is the number to call. We're talking about smartphones, technology, how it's changed communication, how it's changed relationships. We want to hear from you about how it's affected your relationships.
Yeah, I actually remember, I was just mentioning this, staring down at a box of light, and I was talking to Ben yesterday, and on Armand's Terrace, there's a great view of the street, and at nighttime, you would see all these people walking around, and he'd lived there for 35 years at his old apartment. And when he used to look down, he would see, you know, some hazy people walking around, some cars driving by. And he was mentioning recently that you look down and you see all these people staring into these little glowing boxes of light. And at nighttime, you see all these people kind of magically staring at these glowing things that like look like they're floating through this through the air. And it's just a great image, I thought.
A change in the landscape.
Absolutely.
And I think that's part of why it's so captivating and part of why it's become such an intense thing for a lot of people. The screen is a very intense and powerful visual thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And many of us spend all day looking at screens, right? We get on our commute to work, we're checking our phone, we get to work, we sit at a computer, at a desk, looking at that screen, and we take our lunch break, we're looking back at our phone screen, we get home, we turn on our TV screen.
Right. I mean, when the TV first came out, I mean, even though it was 8 inches wide, it was like, whoa, look at this thing. It's lit up. It's moving. There's all this life in this tiny little thing. And I know sometimes I'll look at my phone and say, this is amazing. There's so much happening. I can touch this screen and it moves around and it
responds
does all the things I want to do. It's amazing.
The thing about screens is that it can actually disrupt our circadian rhythm. Because our body is used to certain cycles of light and darkness, and when we're on the screen too late at night, it can really make it harder to get sleep and to get good sleep.
Right, and we all know people who I know several people in my life at least that will check their phone right before they go to bed for 30 minutes, and then right when they wake up, look at their phone again for another 30 minutes, make sure that they're updated, make sure that they're connected to everything that is happening at that moment.
Yeah, I made a rule for myself a while ago that I can't do anything on my cell phone after 10.
Right, so it's self-control that comes along. We have all this opportunity to access information at all times, access communication all the time. But like Ken was saying, turn it off when you're done. When you don't want to do it, give yourself a break and go outside.
Or even say, do I really need to know this right this minute? I can wait until later.
Right, and you're sort of full of a lot of information that might not be that important to mm-hmm. you. It's sort of irrelevant information. And I was reading an article just recently about how a lot of this information that comes in, this irrelevant information, sort of fills our brain and our memory with stuff that doesn't totally matter, and it leaves less space for stuff that we really do care about. And that's just something to think about. So here we have actually Tony on the line. Tony, how you doing?
Fine. And you guys are doing a great job. This is a very relevant topic. I'm 60 years old, and I identify with Ken, your former caller, but at the same time, I too want to stay current.
Right.
And reflecting on this phenomena is very valuable.
Yep.
Reflecting with analytic skills and just a humane perspective is really valuable because it does become addicting. It
right.
really does.
It's great to talk about this stuff. So how do you feel about your smartphone? Do you have a smartphone?
Oh, yeah, I certainly do. My wife and I talk about it a lot. And I have to exert discipline so it doesn't become addictive. And it's replaced my desktop computer. It's mobile. You have all the apps, all the functions of a desktop on this small device. So on the aha level, it's phenomenal. It really is. Japan, Puerto Rico, you could do whatever you need to do in seconds.
You know, Tony, it's interesting that you bring that up. It is a computer. And I remember my first family computer. I actually looked it up on Google, the specifications of our first family computer back in the 90s. And it turns out that my phone that fits in my pocket has more power, more processing power, more storage capacity than that enormous boxy family computer that sat on a desk.
And that's my experience, too. In 1989, we bought our first PC.
Yeah.
And I started in 82 with the Transit Authority with a PC on the desk.
I'm in my 50s, and I feel like it's easy to not keep moving forward with what's current.
Right,
and
it requires some work to keep up,
well,
I think.
And there are some things that I won't do, like Twitter. But in terms of, I want to be part of what's happening. And I hear that you're saying that too. This is a sociological phenomenon, and it keeps unfolding, and I want to be part of it. I don't want to be a prisoner to it, but I want to be part of it.
And, you know, may I add this? I'm a baby boomer, and I taught as an adjunct professor at Brooklyn College, and I wanted to be conversing with the younger generations, X, Y, millennials. I didn't want to be seen as, oh, well, he's an old guy, you know?
No, absolutely not.
I still carry that as a value. So when I speak to my niece and younger people, they say, wow, this guy's hip. He's an old guy who knows what's going on.
Certainly sounds like it. But I got a quick question, Tony. You mentioned earlier that you discuss this with your wife a lot. How do you each feel individually? Is it a point of contention, or is it
It's a point of passionate conversation because she refuses to get a cell phone, and that's okay. That's all right. I understand her resistance, and I respect it. I'm the tech guy. I'm the communication guy. And when I do show her some of the marvels of getting video clips on a smartphone from Japan on relevant topics like environmental issues and so forth, her eyes light up.
See? Right. Yeah. So, you said that does she have a cell phone at all, or she just not have a smartphone?
Oh, no. And she wants to out of, safety and logical reasons. So while she's mobile, she can be in communication with me.
Right.
So that's a real practical issue. I want to stay with the young generation and right on point with all the technology.
Absolutely.
So
I'm hearing that with you. That's great. And I absolutely respect a lot of people in my life who aren't maybe from my generation, but keep up with everything. It's great. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, my father has an iPhone, and he needs me to help him, but he's out there with his iPhone getting videos and taking pictures. And
yeah, actually, one last question for you, Tony. So you're saying your wife doesn't have a smartphone, but do you find her to be somebody who really fights to keep her privacy these days?
I would say so.
So
yeah,
she's somebody that has like a tendency to say, is that a camera over there, or like I don't want them having my location everywhere, this kind of thing. Is that something that you see?
Yeah, I that's a value that I respect. That's at the opposite end of a lot of the young people who are narcissistic. They're selfies
absolutely
everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that terrifies me a little bit, you know, that the GPS is connected. And that I remember one time I went on Facebook and it said, Julian has been to this cafe. And I was like, I didn't press anything. I didn't say to tell everybody
I'm on
that.
The radio.
It actually. Yes, you are.
My wife
just called
me.
No, that's great.
She doesn't know because she doesn't have a smartphone.
Yeah, and you'll actually be able to you'll be able to pull this up if you want to show it to your wife later on our website, thepositivemind.com.
Yeah.
But I know it is a bit scary when you even for myself being a quote unquote young person finding my location being broadcast to people that I didn't want to tell them about, and that is something that I know a lot of people are dealing with, and a lot of people got off of smartphones for that very reason.
Well, you know, may I share one thing with you?
Sure.
I just got an instant message on Facebook from a person in Venezuela,
right,
asking for esoteric information, as if the person knows me. And I said, wait a minute, who is this guy? He's in my friend list.
Right, this isn't a friend of mine.
I responded to him with like a fatherly saying, you know, we don't even know each other. You may be my friend on Facebook, but what happened to courtesy and a common, common introduction? So he emailed back to me in Spanish, instant message. Oh, I'm sorry. You are one of 100 people I sent the same request to. Please forgive me. And it made me reflect with a little twinkle in my eye as to the generational divide on entitlement
right
and communication.
Right. He sort of felt that he can just send this and kind of almost invade your personal space with this message that you only expected friends and close family members perhaps to contact you on this medium.
Precisely.
Right.
Precisely. And the opportunity we have here, even though it annoyed me for 30 seconds, I say, you know, this can build communication between the generations if we use it intelligently and wisely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my grandmother got an iPad and now is learning how to email, and that's fantastic.
Okay. And my mother's 82, and she's got her Android smartphone in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, just
sending texts and pictures. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tony, for talking to us today.
Oh,
we're going to try to get
guys
one
You're
more call
great
on.
Job.
Thank you so much for calling and tuning in, and take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Julian, you mentioned the GPS feature, and that's something that kind of gives me pause. As we wrap up the show here, we would like to take one more call at 212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555. But to finish with the GPS thought, I have a smartphone, and it has the GPS option. But I notice at times the GPS option, the GPS feature, will turn on by itself. And, you know, I'm not a paranoid kind of guy. But when I see that, my thoughts are, wow, this is like a, you know, NSA backdoor. They're tracking me. You know, why is it that the GPS just turns on magically by itself? And I think that that's something that we should think more about, especially with all the revelations about surveillance, you know, being being used on American citizens, right? That that this is a way that people are almost making themselves, putting themselves out there. I mean, you think about how I think, I don't know, just these revelations we've had with everything with the Patriot Act and Edward Snowden. And
right, well, also about when there's any crime, you see almost immediately there are cameras that capture the person on just any given street anywhere. So I kind of get a little, I feel like my location on my smartphone is such a small piece of how we are monitored at this point that I just feel like it's part of this world that we're living
yeah,
in.
Yeah, and this constant awareness of being watched. I wonder how that affects us as we grow older in a generation that is perhaps always sort of, you know, being watched in some sense. And I see a lot of young people very specifically affected by this and sort of knowing that they're being watched and then kind of performing a little bit and asking for a little bit more attention than they might. Just like Tony mentioned, a little bit of that narcissistic kind of generation happening.
You just made me think of something really interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt. But it's kind of what religion used to be, at least for me. I was raised very religious, and then I walked around for most of my life thinking like I'm being watched by God, you know, that I'm being monitored, and that's a kind of way to elevate my behavior.
And there's an interesting concept called the panopticon. I won't get too into it, but it's this idea that you're always being watched, and that people behave differently when they feel like they might be see the camera, but they say, oh, it's possible that I could be being watched, so I'm going to act differently.
Mm-hmm. And at least God in most religions is a loving God, right? I have a feeling the people that are watching us now aren't exactly as loving.
Right. But you're being being observed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take one more caller. We have Catherine on the line. Catherine, thank you so much for calling in.
Hi everybody. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm good.
How do you feel about the subject we're talking about? How have you been affected by smartphones, or do you have one? Do you not? Has it affected relationships?
I have an iPhone. I don't always. It's a bit of a paradox. They call it a smartphone, and when I text, you know how it auto corrects your spelling.
Yeah.
The simplest things, it doesn't get right, and then it can take the most coherent sentence and jumble it up.
Yeah.
That amuses me.
Some humorous misunderstandings definitely come from that. How has it affected your relationships?
I agree about what you were talking on about the last shows about, you know, it's really people hide behind it, and it has its advantages and disadvantages. And I just think it's unfortunate. I think you had also mentioned Facebook, that people are so into that they're ignoring the jewel of the people that are around them, and it's sad. I think it's sad.
Well, it's definitely a new way of interacting and having relationships. You know, I think it can help certain people, and you know, in other ways, it can affect relationships maybe more negatively. But
do you feel like you've lost friends, or not necessarily lost
closeness,
friends, but lost the intimacy that you perhaps had in your friendships before? Because they depend on Facebook to know your birthday or know what you're doing or what events or messaging. Like, do you find your personal relationships becoming less intimate because of it?
No, because I don't have Facebook.
Okay, well, did you ever have Facebook?
Pardon me?
Did you ever have Facebook?
No, I was never interested in it.
I had it, but I quit it. And I found that life has been somewhat better. I know Julian has about a zillion friends on Facebook.
I love hearing about it. And I use Facebook to keep in touch with people that a lot of my friends have moved away for college. Mm-hmm. And then after mm-hmm. they stayed in those states or those countries. And it helps me stay in touch with those people. But I know that in the end, I mean, am I just sort of grasping for a relationship that might just eventually dissolve because they live so far away, and then maybe I should just focus on the ones that really do matter the most to me, and the ones that do matter the most will sort of hang on whether I have Facebook or not.
It seems like our ability to stay connected to people over time, like I've reached back to my friends from grammar school.
Right.
So that is something that I definitely had no idea that I could do until very recently.
Yeah.
And it's like, it gives a kind of continuity.
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually at 1:55, which is our ending point for the program. But thank you so much for talking to us, Catherine, and tuning in today.
Yeah, and those of you out there listening on the podcast around the country and around the world, we'd love to hear from you at positivemind@wbai.org on how you feel about this topic. So if you're listening on iTunes or on the podcast, send us an email with your thoughts.
Thank you so much for listening today, guys. I'm Julian Joiello, Ben Starr hosting with me today.
And Lisa Arnone, our wonderful guest.
Absolutely.
So happy to be here.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be here on next Tuesday, Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Tune in to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. And listen to us on our archives at thepositivemind.com. Take care.
Derrière toi, ton enfant dort sur ton dos. Tes yeux ne veulent plus rien voir, Tifi Congo, Tifi Congo. Mais tu avances dans la nuit noire en berçant l'enfant sur ton dos. Et des tourments, elle emporte son enfant. Comme il y a des millions d'années, l'histoire va recommencer. Au milieu du feu et du sang, une femme emporte son enfant. Comme il y a des millions d'années, l'histoire va recommencer. Tifi Congo, Tifi Congo, ton enfant dort sur ton dos. Congo, Tifi Congo, il sera roi d'un monde nouveau. De savane en plantation, beaucoup d'autres Tifi Congo coupèrent la canne et le coton, et balafon, vini banjo.